Welcome to the Dead Zone Podcast. Dead Zone is the sci-fi tabletop miniature skirmish game from Mantic Games. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Harper and Jack Fike. I am your announcer, William Randolph Wintergreen.
Welcome to episode 70.5 of Dead Zone the Podcast. In this special episode, we look at the new Dead Zone FAQ that just was pre-released on Facebook. As always, you can go to deadzonegame.podbean.com to listen to the show, or you can go to youtube.com/c/deadzonethepodcast for the video version. And now on to the episode.
And welcome to the Dead Zone episode 70.5 special edition. I'm your host, Jack.
And I'm Rob.
And we're going to be doing a little FAQ version 2 special, just for you.
Yep, it just got leaked onto the Facebooks by, I think, Rob Berman put it up, much to the surprise of everyone. And it's not, the rules committee kept saying that they're waiting for it to be formatted and make it look pretty for the, for release. And, no, we just got a pretty much plain, document, but we have all the FAQ, so we can talk about it now.
Yeah, this is a fully functional FAQ. We don't need the bells and whistles.
No. So, we're going to go through the whole FAQ. We'll talk about stuff that strikes our fancy and have a little special episode here. Version 2 FAQ. See, it rhymes.
Oh, yeah. I think everything they release needs to have rhyming slang in the title.
There you go. Yeah, each FAQ should have a name, that's for sure.
Yes.
We'll call this one the Coach Edition, because it's the first one that our good old buddy, old pal Coach is on the Rules Committee with our other friend Shane, amongst the old Rules Committee guys. I don't know if anybody else is new on it. I think all the other guys are veterans. But they got the FAQ out, and we'll go over it.
I'm not going to lie to you. When I'm Emperor of the World and I have to shuffle them onto the cattle cars, there will be a tear, one lone tear. I won't like it, but I've already made a statement. I can't go back on that.
That's true. If you haven't listened to the Countercharge Dead Zone the Podcast episode, yes, it is. We went off script by the end. But
yes. Anyways.
The FAQ is out. So the first question they answered was the big one that Coach loves and uses much to his joy, especially at Adeptcon, is the fact that in the old book it used to say that bridges and things that are only half size could only fit half the number of models. But now with model size, they had to address that. It wasn't in the old book. For some reason, they took it out and never put. I don't know if they didn't mean to put it in or if it was just an oversight. Or if it was a plan that just let anybody walk in anything. But the size for bridges and how many models and what size can fit per bridge cube space. So they've officially announced that half size or smaller tiles are considered to have capacity of 2 rather than 4, which means that size 2 models or size 1 model can be on that half 2, but size 3 or 4 cannot finish their move on the half tile. The interesting thing is that they can cross these half tiles, they just can't stop on them. I like that little addition that you can run across it, but you just can't stand on it. Your balance isn't that good.
Yeah. I think we were of the opinion that it was an omission from the first version of the second version, because in the first version, it had a picture, much like in the version 2 book you see now. It had a picture, and it said this size window, this size opening, this size. And it had, okay, much like Robin just said, this is what you could stand on. And it wasn't there for version 2, and it left a lot. It was a easily exploitable and controversial bit of rules tinkery, and I think starting strong this one needed to be addressed. It had to be addressed, and I think the way that it was done might lead to interesting gameplay.
Yeah, it does allow that size 1 or 2 size models can stand on a on a platform, and things like aberrations or stage ones cannot get them and therefore render them immortal. But even though it happened, Coach was able to do that quite a few times, especially when he's playing Tyler. And if you go on Family Gamers, that match is actually on there. But the amount of times, I don't think it did come up in the tournament. I don't think so. But
I'm quite sure it did. That was like the coach maneuver. Remember in Star Trek, there was a special maneuver that someone kept doing?
The Picard maneuver?
Something like that. People, all the Trekkies are losing their full mind. But that was the coach maneuver. All his Pathfinders would find themselves on those bridges.
Yeah, it makes sense, and it's thematic. So I'm always pro making sense and being thematic. It does create situations in game that you're especially the bigger guys become useless. But yeah, oh well. Like I say, it makes sense and it's thematic, so we'll go for it. And that's the version they chose, so it's good. At least they came down on one side or the other finally. So.
Well, I some of these rules are a little tinkery, a little on the. Why do you need to address that? It can't be that important. But they've added that little bit where it does add, like you said, thematic, where something can sprint across those openings, mm-hmm. across those bridges. It's just your model's not going to be able to stand on it.
Yeah, and I think most of these rules are things that people have asked, so it obviously has come up in other people's games, and there's always going to be a rules lawyer trying to manipulate a rule. And we'll get to some of those later where they had to put things in where they're just like, well, that's ridiculous. Of course it works this way. But people were exploiting some certain things, and that's what these FAQs are for. So I'm glad they finally put it out. It's only been a year, but it's good. Hopefully get some already there's like a list of new questions, so hopefully these come out a little bit more often, maybe four times a year, even twice a year would be nice. So we'll get questions answered, questions we most want answered. So Jack, please read the next question that was answered.
The next question was, it was in regards to what's considered stacks for the Agile special rule. So this had come up in the last few months. This question had reared its ugly head, and I didn't, in my mind, I didn't know if we hadn't played anything with Agile or if it hadn't come up for us, but it was like the new hotness, this question. And the answer is that a stack of cubes is considered to be a series of cubes arranged vertically, obviously. That's, get that out of the way. And the model with Agile can make the bonus vertical move up or down through this stack. So we had discussed this with Coach. I think we've retreaded this ground before, but instead of just being a fast, like Agile was version one, this gives you a free movement vertically rather than horizontally.
Yeah, and the free movement has to be directly above. And that was the question before. Is it, can you go on a diagonal above? To, you know, like, so that's still up a stack, right? And usually that's a free move, but this is, you have to be directly above or directly below, not any angles, not anything else. That's it. And then they have the whole, which is, comes up next question, is the hatches. The idea that you can only go up through a floor if it has a hatch or if it has a half size or quarter size tile up there. And the next question is, can you move directly through a ceiling with a single move, so you can go through in a tower through the floors? And we've always played that you could. We don't, you know, that's nitpicky at that point. The saying that's, oh, they have to swing out, so they cost an extra move to go up in the angle and then over kind of thing. And, so now they've said it, you can't do it unless there's a hatch or, agree that, in a friendly game, agree that there is always hatches kind of thing.
Right. I think it was Dari Winter who had brought this up a while ago as a thought exercise. And it kicked a hornet's nest that I had not anticipated.
Yeah. Because we never really cared, but I guess people do, especially in a competitive environment, they do care if that's a free move, right? So,
yeah, can we let the cat out of the bag, or can we just broach the subject now that I think Dead Zone is being turned into a tournament game, and some of these high-flying, swashbuckling, thematic things that were a joy in the game have to be, you know, pushed back a little bit.
Yeah, or at least quantified so that they can say, no, you can't do that, yes, can do that. Whereas we're like, yeah, whatever, do what you want. And they've added a new rule called Hatch N, where N is the size of a model which can go through the hatch. I think this is getting a little ridiculous at this point, that saying that some hatches you can't get big guys through or not, like, that's really getting to the minutiae, and I really don't like this. I think it should just be anybody can go through a hatch, but if you really want to have to go through every single floor and everything and say, okay, this hatch is a size 1, this one's a size 2, this one's... Like, that's just... You were complaining how long it took to set up the tournament as it was. Now you have to decide how big a hatch is and everything. Like, that's... I think this is getting a little too minutia, but that's just my opinion.
I agree. This in particular, this section here, not the question in general, but this section here was where I was like, we're getting tinkery, especially because in my head, I thought, how would we do that? And I thought, okay, we would have to build tokens or something. And I thought, your face, when you looked at the game board and there was about 100 tokens through all the, well, you'd have flipped the table. You'd have broke a watermelon with your thighs and pulled your hair out in rage. Like, there would be no way that would fly.
Yeah, this is for every hatch now you have to say how big it is. And it, like you say, how are you going to determine that? Do you have to have a number written on the hatch? And then that looks weird. Or like you say, tokens, or just try to remember, but then halfway through the match you'd be like, no, that was a size 3. I'm pretty sure that was a size 2. And it's like, this is getting a little too minutiae. Just say everybody can go through any hatch. Just make it easy. You're making this game too hard, that's what I think, but not hard, but just, like you say, it's becoming finicky. Yeah, that's not what Dead Zone's about, but once again, hey, to each their own. All our hatches are going to be, every floor will have a hatch, and every hatch is hatch 4. There you go. That solves all of our issues. And the next question to get off that controversial topic is, this is the one that people were actually using to manipulate the game. It says, can I end an action in the air and then glide further down? So people were thinking of having a Plague Territon with given the mutation glide. So they just teleport like 3 in the air and then glide all the way across the whole board. But you have to, they've decided you have to end your action in a cube where it can be physically placed on the table. So you can't just shoot way up in the air and glide down. You have to land on a building or somewhere and then glide down. And that's just common sense once again. Maybe not thematic sense. You probably should be able to just do that, but to make the game work and not just be manipulated by things, they've decided that you have to be able to land to glide down.
Right. So they've decided that you have to end your action that, like, because the teleport, well, see, now I'm getting ahead of myself because, spoilers, teleportation's addressed in this FAQ, but they want you to end your teleportation on the ground as if that's the last of your actions right there. You have to end on the ground. So that makes perfect sense, but in a delightfully mischievous Loki-esque world, wouldn't it be delightful if you were able to teleport 3 squares high and then glide?
Yeah, it's one of those things. And how often, once again, how often is that going to come up? How often are you going to give your Territon the glide ability? Nobody else can be in the air and like jump up. Like, nobody can do that other than teleporting. I think that's the only way you could do that, right?
Right. If murder birds don't get glide, then, you know, they'd be something that they could fly, and then they would be the same thing, mm-hmm. but really a very sparse yeah, selection.
It doesn't happen very often, but they have to quantify it because people were manipulating the rules and pissing off their people they were playing, so they have to add this kind of stuff in.
Imagine if someone was climbed up, or a Territon was on the top of a 3-tall tower, then teleported up 3 and then glided for 6.
Yeah, you just go right across the whole board, yeah.
you could be just floating across the whole board again.
cheeky people.
Yeah. Like, again, I would not be able to contain my boyish enthusiasm, but I could see how someone would.
Yeah, it'd be funny until your opponent just flips the table and kicks you in the teeth.
So just you have to end your teleportation on the ground after that.
Yep, just like flight, that the murder bird ability, you have to land. You can't just hover in the air. Which, yeah, okay. For mechanic-wise, I understand why you have to do that.
Yeah.
Jack, what's the next one?
Okay. If we're now dealing with falling and moving. If I have a jetpack, a jump pack, can I move off a building and fall to the floor without getting pinned as per the jump pack rule and complete my move when on ground level? So what they're saying is some people, enforcers are the biggest. The jump pack means you can fall without getting injured. You can move across open spaces.
And you don't get pinned when you fall. It's like a parachute, really.
Exactly. Okay, so you condensed what I was trying to say much more concisely. Imagine a parachute. Well, if you land on the ground with the jump pack, you are not pinned.
Yep. So you could just keep moving.
So if you've ended, you're on the ground, and you still have a short action to take another step, well, then you can go that other square. Makes perfect sense. I don't know. Don't know if this was a big question anywhere, but now it's going to go into another stage that I think, like, this was setting the ground rules for other things.
Well, and this is interesting because I never really thought of it before, but if you're an enforcer on the top of a tower, you can jump off that tower. Like, the first move is right down to the bottom floor. You don't have to walk down all those floors, so you save all that movement, and then you can keep moving. So it does increase the enforcer, once again, situationally, but it does help. It actually makes jump packs even more useful. They weren't that useful before, but this kind of makes it a little bit more useful. So.
Yeah, because imagine you're up on a four-high tower, a sniper, and up come the zombies through the tower, and they're moving, or something slows. You could wait.
Yeah.
You have three extra rounds of sniping, and then you just step off.
Yeah.
You do the old Deadpool, just whoop.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Then they have to walk back down the tower. They can't. Because the next question, the next question is just about falling one cube, because you don't get pinned for falling one cube.
Correct.
But they said, can you voluntarily fall down one cube and not get pinned and continue your move? And the answer is no. That time it's because going down one level is not falling. That's moving down that level. So you're not allowed to just – that's someone trying to get a free square movement, right? Because usually it costs – although moving down one level doesn't cost anything anyway. So I don't understand. Yeah, that one's weird because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter either way because – you just move forward and down one anyways. You move diagonally, right? So I don't understand why this even comes up.
It's not like they said I was knocked down and that's been addressed or most of the time when you're knocked back, you're pinned anyways. So I don't know exactly where this.
Yeah, it says it's voluntary fall down one cube, but you just move down one cube anyways. What's the difference? So it's dumb. Yeah. I don't understand. That's a weird question because it makes no sense to me that it's just you're moving down. You're not falling. You're moving. And it wouldn't affect you in any way. You'd either move one square or fall one square. It's the exact same thing.
Which maybe if you don't have a move for some reason, something that can't move, maybe you could just voluntarily like topple off the top, but I don't know. But I think that's, like I said, the question that was addressed before seemed very simple, but I thought it was ground rules to address this one here that kind of said, well, just check out what we've said before.
Yeah. And the next question is, can flight be used to move overcused occupied by enemy models? And the answer is yes, which is good. That makes sense, too. You're flying over their heads. And your model has to be able to place at the end of the move. That's fine, but that's cool. It kind of reminds me of Kingdoms of War in that way. You can fly over people's heads.
in a very tinkery FAQ, I've used the term tinkery too much. And I don't even know if it's a real term. I think I made it up.
It's jiggery and pokery.
Yeah, both of those things. In an FAQ based on the minutiae, this is by far the most like, hey, he's just flying over you. You don't need to know what square he's really in. You saw an aberration, probably, if he stretches his arm out, should be able to fill that full square. He's flying. Just give him a break. He's moving from point A to point B. Let's move on.
Yeah. Yeah, I get – yeah. Once again, this doesn't – it just makes sense to me, but there must have come up somewhere along the way.
Yes.
And the next question.
So if a model decides to shoot a single target with multiple weapons, such as using fire control – which marauders have that ability with their suits.
Do they still? I'm not sure if they still do. I think they took that away from them.
Good.
I think the only person, it's like one of the, I think only one of the, maybe I'm just talking out of my butt, but I thought only one of the mercs has it now. I'm not sure even if, I think the Iron Ancestor has it too. But I think they took it, let me just see, before I just make a fool of myself.
Well, I don't care. I say suck it, greenskins, you dirty, filthy animals, and I'm glad you lost your ability.
Yeah, they did. They Ripper Rainmaker only has solid now. They do not no longer have fire control.
Ah, okay.
So yes, I think it's Iron Ancestors have fire control.
Either way, the with the fire control. Yeah, I got some green skin hate out of the system, so that's good. We're all good. All good. I'll just take a little sip here. And...
Cheers.
Okay. So, do you roll to survive against the combined attack or once for each weapon? And this is another one that makes perfect sense, and it must have come up because I can kind of see how...
If you weren't understood how the game works fundamentally, maybe you'd think that it was a combined attack, but...
We've played other games where it is that way. So, of course, you roll for the first weapon. They do. You go back and forth. The second weapon, third weapon, however many weapons you are attacked with individually, they're addressed.
Yeah, separately. Yeah. Yep. That's just once again. Yeah, it's probably some other game system the person's coming from where you do combine them. Where in Dead Zone, it's always separate. Every shot is its own shot.
Right.
This is the one that's most controversial for us, because I am pissed. Because the question is, does a model's line of sight originate from their eye, head, or any part of the model? Which is fine, that's one question. And it should be any part of the model, which it is any part of the model. But consider bases to be part of the model. No! Bases don't matter! Coach said that he fought for this one, but I'm not sure. These people... I think there's a conspiracy against us, Jack.
No, the thing is, there was an issue, and I gave props to the guy who addressed it as soon as he heard that that it was going to be from the eyes or even the head of the model too, and it was so. The guy who wrote, I wish I knew. I gave him a shout out last show. He put the P's and the Q's right where they had to be. He laid it on the line. You can't do that. So it's addressed. Now it's from, and Rob and I do a gentleman's thing, head and shoulders. At no point are we like, okay, my foot can see the barrel of your gun. That's asinine as far as we're concerned. But anyways, it is now from your model, the vicinity of the model to the enemy's model. Now, I would like to have thought that at some point, taking pleasure in basing models and the pageantry of Kings of War and the making of the art aspect of modeling would kind of circumvent this bases matter thing, but it doesn't. It's a slap in the face to me and to Rob and to the campaign. All the staff and everyone who here at the office who've been working hard making buttons and posters and bumper stickers that say hashtag bases don't matter. But, that's only, 15, 16 people.
Yeah, Sheila's crying. Sheila in accounting is crying currently, people.
Oh, I didn't know.
It's just not right.
Oh.
It's not right. You know what? I think we need to take a break. Let us cool down. I have to console Sheila here. It's all right. It's okay.
Her cat sweater must be so damp right now.
It's true. It's sad. People making Sheila cry. Hashtag bases don't matter.
Countercharge. Countercharge is the first podcast totally dedicated to the game Kings of War. Join your hosts Andrew, Mark, and Rob as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War. You can find us on iTunes and at OhioHammer.com, a proud member of the Ohio Hammer Network of Podcasts.
Hey, this is Mark Zielinski from the Countercharge Podcast, and you're listening to Rob and Jack on Dead Zone, the podcast. Fantastic.
And if some pedantic little decides that he's going to aim at the corner of my base, because I've got a little cog there on there just for aesthetics, well, I will punch him in his throat. I swear.
Oh Jack, we're back on the air.
And welcome back to the Dead Zone Podcast with your hosts, Jack and Rob. And, we're doing a little FAQ kind of special where we're going to look through and see what's new, what the rules committee has come up with. And, please join us.
Yes. The next question is, can I shoot a weapon with slow reload more than once if I use the shoot command dice? And I'm pretty sure we did this one wrong once or twice, maybe in our time, but the answer is no, because you can't shoot again because it has a reload marker on it. So you have to have the reload marker removed before you can shoot it. So you can shoot things that are heavy, but you can't shoot things that are slow reload, which is an interesting distinction. I don't know if it has come up, but I have a feeling it has. But now it is clear.
I don't think so. The mortar is the one that it might have come up most, but the Rebs rocket team.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, the system's a little wonky with the team weapons anyways.
Yeah,
so,
I'm not a fan of the whole crew serviced weapon and loaders, and it's clunky. Yeah, like you say, you have to kind of do it, I guess, if you want that. I like the just heavy. Heavy works for a lot of things. But maybe it would make mortars too powerful. But then again, the pulse bombard and stuff for the drones, they're just they can just do what they want. They don't have a slow reload. So you already have other things in the game that can do it. So why does certain things can't do it? It's an extra level of complexity that I don't think is necessary. And especially since there's two different versions, you get those kind of things with the loaders, like the mortar and the rocket launchers. But then in the new GCPS, you have teams. And that's totally different. And it's just strange. Yeah. They have two different systems. But it's in the game. And they had to address the fact that you can't use command dice. And that makes sense once you think about it. Because it does have that slow reload token.
Yes. This is one of those questions that I can very, very see that the other person's point of view. Like, the command dice, for the most part, are kind of like the hand of God. They're really like a top tier mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could see how someone, in most cases, for most splats, for most things, it's end all be all. This one, no.
Yeah, it doesn't automatically remove that token for you. And the next question is, how does smoke affect line of sight? And there's a long, really long answer. And I don't know why it needs to be this long, because the answer is, if you're in the smoke, or if you're trying to shoot into the smoke, you can't draw line of sight to a target. But you can draw line of sight to a square. So things like indirect frag and grenades you can throw into smoke or throw to smoke fine. But things like it burns or blast or regular shots, you cannot. Makes sense. That's why you throw smoke. It's to make it so people can't shoot.
Yeah, it's a very long with like pluses and minuses. And you get a net if in this situation. Literally, you can't target the square. Because of the smoke.
Well, you can target the square. You just can't target a person in the square. That's all it is.
So like some things you have to target the person
Yeah.
And then the effects move on from there. And sure, if you're firing through the smoke and stuff, that's all addressed. I think that's pretty simple. So
yes, like, if you're an adjacent cube, you get -1 to your shot. And that's about it. But so the funny thing is you can get a clear shot and have -1 for smoke. So you can have a – that's what they're discussing. That's what a lot of it discussing, just the different situations. But it's a long drawn-out thing, but pretty much smoke – it stops you from drawing line of sight to a thing in the smoke or out of the smoke. So there you go.
Yeah. So this is my favorite question in the FAQ. My second favorite.
Okay.
Second favorite. What size base does the dog drone go on? The dog drone should be based on either the 25 millimeter or the 40 millimeter base.
Well, I thought bases matter. I mean, you can have them on two different bases.
So why would you put them on the big base if now people?
Well, now you can draw a line of sight from that big base.
You can snipe the corner of that base, or you can go, okay, my dog drone can see from the
from the corner of this base. It's one of those things. It's like, why would they give you two options? Why not just say one or the other? I understand it pisses people off. They'd have to rebase, but if you want it to be tournament legal, just say one or the other.
Yeah, so bases don't matter.
But unless, Sheila's crying again, Jack.
I'm sorry I brought it up, but it was so delicious that I was crestfallen when bases mattered, and then I realized just how many just stock gray bases underneath pristinely painted, beautifully done models I would be seeing from now on.
Yeah,
and then to see, oh, but you can put the 40 mil base on there. I don't even know what I put my dog drone on, and quite frankly, if I want to put it on a base that has ornate garish things on it, or if he's in a dynamic pose,
or if he has no base because the dog drone stands up without a base, you don't have to have a base under that guy.
That is true.
But I guess you do. It has to be 25 or 40.
I guess so. They couldn't have said what it should have said, read, you know, the bases were never, it was never strictly said that one base had to be the base for used. And I don't believe they ever shipped bases specifically.
Well, it's who knows what bases for which model. They kind of throw them all together because they don't sell models singularly. So you never know which base is supposed to be on which guy.
Right, so we're way too far past that. I think I threatened violence if someone actually did say that. I think I might have had a rant about this before.
Oh, I'm sure it's been happening, but it's just let's just go ahead. Next question is: what's the difference between an item and equipment? What are examples of both? This is interesting because I never really thought about this before. But items can be carried, dropped, and picked up, but equipment is in the model's profile and is fixed but it does not use up a model's item slot. So that means you can have a guy with an energy shield, you could give him another energy shield. So you'd have two energy shields. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Or even like people like Boomer, I guess you could give, well, he has unlimited grenades anyways, but, you know, there's other people with items that, or equipment that is also an item. So yeah, it's just something that I never really thought about once again, but it's interesting.
It's one of those things that you don't think of in the course of the day, but some little gremlin went,
this guy's an energy shield. What if I gave him an energy shield?
Yeah.
So they stack, I assume. So that means that you'd have to roll against the one energy shield and then you'd have to roll against the other energy shield. I assume that's the way it would work, right?
Yeah,
that's an FAQ question. They never answered it in this thing. They should have said they just stack, but you don't just use the higher energy shield. I assume you have to roll against both. Yeah.
I think FAQ. I don't think bases should matter. So clearly I'm on the,
what's the next one?
The next one. So can I use more than one ammo item in a shoot action with a model with scavenger who can carry more than one item? Fantastic question. The Z's are, as far as I remember, the only one that can scavenge, pick up multiple items and have. And you would think, okay, well, I have three of this item. I want to use them. on my shoot action, would I be able to use three ammos? Unfortunately, no. The maximum you can use, one item per action. So,
suck it.
So it, you could, if you could shoot, use that ammo, and then if you had a command dice, you could shoot, use the ammo, but every action, one item.
Yeah, that's a funny thing that literally Aziza, I think Aziza are the only ones with scavenger. So, really? You does it matter that much? Z, I think, has a 7 shoot, I'm pretty sure. Give him the ability to use extra dice there, because he needs everything he can get.
So you're doing a pity rule?
Yeah, pity the poor Z. Yeah, he's a 7 shoot. So even if you gave him 3 extra dice, he'd need to get 7 or 8 on those 3 extra dice anyway. So the next question is, must an enforcer energy? I can't say engineer now. Must a forcer engineer be in the same cube as the sentry gun to place it? And the answer is yes. That makes sense. You're putting the item down. You can't just toss it, I guess. It's not one of those ones that's like, it's not a Pokemon. Sentry gun is not a Pokemon. That should be in the rule, actually. So I should say that. But that's a nice, easy one.
Sentry gun, I choose you!
Whip it across the screen like a grenade, so you throw it like 3 squares. That'd be pretty cool, actually. But a sentry gun, I believe, is actually a very large item. It's not a Pokeball.
Yeah, yeah. It deploys, and it looks like it's about the same size as like a
Z. Yeah.
So next, keeping in the sentry gun theme, does a sentry gun count as a friendly model for fight bonuses? The answer is no.
I guess that makes sense. It's not a real model. It's just a item.
It does make a distinction that it's you're not getting the benefit just because the guys over there are like, hey, go on. You're doing you're doing God's work.
What if the engineer was just like swinging the gun, hitting the guy in the leg, distracting him? Maybe it should count as a friendly model.
That's not how that works. No. But it does say that it implies that when you're getting that bonus, it's because the other person in that square is entangling them, making you have to, like, you know, shake
fight
them off.
Fight on two fronts, so, yeah.
Yeah.
And the sentry gun trifecta ends with, can it be activated when there's an enemy model in the same cube? And the answer is no. It's just like anything else. If there's an enemy in the square, you're not shooting anything. That enemy's blocking the gun or holding it or doing something. So... And doesn't the rule that if an enemy gets into a square with a sentry gun, it's automatically destroyed anyways?
So you would unpack that sentry gun, and then the guy would just kick it over, and you'd be like, "Oh,
yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's the rule, but maybe I'm just imagining things again. Hell, I think that bases shouldn't matter.
So what do you know?
What do I know?
So when
what do
I
know?
What do I know? What I had it when I first read this. Sentry gun can be activated, I thought, deployed by the guy. So you couldn't deploy it when there was someone, an enemy in this cube. And I thought, well, obviously not, because there's probably going to be fighting involved and you can't be...
You can only fight or break away when you're in a cube with somebody anyways.
I didn't think that was a... But when you just said now could be activated, do you mean the...
Shooting.
The gun itself is activated to shoot another model? Yeah, okay.
Either way.
Still no.
And I'm pretty sure they get destroyed. So, and Jack, next question.
If I choose to trigger boom as a special action, is my model removed as killed? And boom, for those who don't know, is a suicide vest type situation where...
Ooh, two tsunami.
Oh, that literally, we might need to edit that out.
Yeah. Anyways.
We're talking mob beasts. For some reason, they're a specialist once you strap a bomb to their back. That works, but
special mob beasts. They're the ones you care about most you blow up. It should be the opposite. It should be the ones that blow up are the troops that you don't care about.
You're like, that one just pissed on the rug. Get the bomb.
Put a bomb on his back.
So sorry, buddy. You're going to have to atone for your urinary sins.
Oh. Yeah, pretty much means that if it blows up, your opponent gets the points for it.
Oh, yes. To answer the question. Yes, yes. If you trigger boom, it is with the express written permission of the person who just boomed to themselves that's it. Model's done and it is killed and your opponent does get the points for them.
Yeah. And the next one is, can you use more than one Mantic Splat at a time for the Asterion Overseer's Wheels Within Wheels ability? And the answer is yes. So you could just destroy tons of the other people's Wheels Within Wheels is the one that takes away command dice from the opponent, I believe. So you could use, if you had three splats, you get to take away three of his splats. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. Again, like we'd mentioned before, the splats, the special abilities are kind of are omnipotent type situations. And yeah, I think the to give the wide berth to things like that, let you do, that's where the real fun, bold moves come from. So then next question. The recon table and secret missions are too random? Question mark?
Yeah, that's not really a question. It's kind of a statement, I would think.
Yeah, yeah.
It should be, are the recon tables and secret missions too random? Maybe Yoda wrote this question.
Well, I was kind of in my head. Like, in my head, I was, like, punching it up, but that is how it's written.
Yep.
And the answer is, note that as mentioned on page 42 of the Dead Zone rulebook, the recon table and secret missions are optional rules that may be used to make the game more interesting. Players and tournament organizers can choose whether they use the rules or not. Secret missions particularly can lead to an imbalance in the game and are not recommended for tournament play.
That sounds like Coach answered that one, doesn't it?
That does have a, yeah.
That's a whiff of Coach on that one.
As far as I know, he's the only one on the rules committee that is a back-to-back tournament with Victor. So perhaps he should have the ability to kind of step in and say something like that, carte blanche. But
well, you're just stroking his ego now. You know that we're never – you just stoked those fires again. Now when we record team building exercise, he's just going to be like, I am the winner. That was my Coach impression. It sounded nothing like him, but
no, but it was vaguely. As soon as you did that, I was like, nah, it was something in the
there was
the
something
inflection that I recognized that you were doing from something else. Anyways,
little Professor Frink snuck in there.
But to distill this down, in the book it says they're optional. A lot of people that I talked to who were just starting out in the game didn't play with them in their own.
We would never play with secret missions. We never do that.
We did when in version one we played with the cards, yeah. and but it, really, I think it says it best that it can lead to imbalances in the game. It's not. It doesn't speed the game up by any stretch of imagination.
I don't think it makes it any more fun either. Really,
no. It adds very little unless you've written a, you know, a scenario or something, yeah, in which it's necessary. But I think
that asymmetrical play is different than having secret missions that could be bad, that where you're like, I can't even complete this mission.
Yes. Yeah. So. And I think that's well established. Well, as far as I'm concerned, of all the questions, that's the one that is basically like needed to be answered, but also is like so on the nose, like, yeah, that's right. There's no question.
It's almost like a suggestion to tournament organizers more than an FAQ because, like it says in the book, it's an optional rule. If you're playing at home, it doesn't matter. You don't have to play with them. And tournament organizers can do what the hell they want. It's their tournament, right? So
I think you just hit the nail right on the head. It's kind of a way of saying, hey, we've had a lot of people say, I enjoyed the tournament, except, mm-hmm. or, and I think maybe this is just a way of saying, we've heard you.
Yep.
And now we're going to let tournament people and organizers kind of know that that's the feel. I think you're right.
How did you feel about the secret weapons in the tournament? Because you actually played in it. I did not.
I liked the one secret weapon I got, or the secret weapon.
Hey, that's product placement right there. They owe us money now.
Their washes are top notch. And
they should sponsor us. They really should.
Yeah. When I'm basing my miniatures, I use secret weapons.
There you go. Commercial place. Anyways, secret missions.
The one I couldn't do, and it was...
How did that make you feel? Doesn't that make you feel pretty crappy?
I enjoyed the games I was playing, and I had the option of just trying to kill rather than do it. So, like, there always was that. There always is... Someone can just go, well, you don't have to do it.
But especially in tournaments where points matter, though. And secret weapons, look at that. Secret missions actually got you extra points, too, in the tournament. So some people got screwed out of points in that tournament. Not like it was that competitive.
Is a little harsh, but yes, there's a chance that you cannot maximize in the same way that other people are able to gain points.
Yeah.
It's in a tournament, whether you're playing a tournament to win, and that's the thing, that's an imbalance that needed to be addressed. And I think this question says it.
Not to mention, I know a lot of people, because you had to roll secretly what your thing was and write it down on your sheet. And I know tons of people who saw the other person's sheet and were just like, oh, that's what you're doing. Like, it was like such a wild west of everybody knew what you were doing anyways. And if you tried to hide it, it was like, it was very clunky. Once again, it was clunky how you tried to like do the secret missions anyway. So
in the handout, there was the three of them were on the same sheet and they were like that. And I was playing Bill and I said, can I use your pencil for a second? I didn't have one. And once I rolled it, I put a big dash beside it, and I wasn't looking, and I heard him go, oh yeah, that's a good idea. I'm going to mark mine too. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of, it was Bill Foreman, I just have to give him a shout out because he was fantastic there, and I check out his channel. Yep. Trainaholic. He was, I know when he's working, he likes to listen to this podcast. So I'm just going to, this isn't for everyone else. This is just for you, Bill. Sue too. Obviously Sue. She's wonderful. This is very nice, but everyone else just don't listen.
Okay, Bill, you can come back now.
Okay.
I actually like the next question because it's kind of funny. Because it's, how does glide work with knockback, blast, indirect, or frag? So when you get blasted off something, you can use glide, which is so funny. So you get blasted off, all of a sudden you just like glide backwards down. So you get to glide, but you can only glide in the direction that you were knocked back or blasted. And you can't change direction, so you can only go in that. So it's like you're like unconscious gliding to the ground on your whatever's causing you to glide. I think that's kind of funny.
This has never come up with us. Yes. This has never come up with us, and it makes perfect sense that you would be able to glide, but I like that they added that you can't change direction. You'd think, okay, someone would glide would then just course correct and be able to go where they wanted. But I think thematically it's funnier if they have to go, whoa, and they're just soaring, like, say, backwards, flying, however, whatever propulsion they use.
Yeah, it doesn't come up much because not too many things have glide, but it is a funny visual, and I enjoy that one.
Yeah. And the next question is, during a fight, can I knock back into the ground? And worded this way, it's kind of confusing, but what they mean is, during a fight, can I use the skill knock back? My model knocking back the opposition model. Normally now, is then the way I would always never thought to knock someone in the ground, but you knock the person away from the direction you are with certain weapons. But if you're physically, you can choose to put them into a cube or into a cube that has a wall. You can put them into a cube that's open air, you know, off a building, but into the ground. And the answer is no, you can't choose to, I don't know, Gallagher them into the ground like a ripe melon.
Yeah, you can't just punch them into the ground. You have to choose someone on the same horizontal level. It's because when you knock someone back, you knock them away, right? So if you didn't knock them away, if you had somebody else in the square with you, they could pound on them too. as it is, they'd have to do an extra move to move into that next square, and or if, especially if you have like enemies all around you, they would have a bonus rather than an enemy or whatever. I can see the reason why you'd want to keep someone in the same square as you, but no, they have to punch them away or toss them away, whatever you're doing with the knockback.
Yeah, yeah. The way you just put it now, I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Why you'd want to keep knocking them back if you had two guys with knockback weapons, you could just dribble them back and forth like you're the like you're the Warriors. So yeah, no, you can't. You have to send them out of the space
or into a wall, which bounces them back anyways. So the next one is a muddled Rampage is pinned and wounded, and then rolls 7 and 8 on the Rampage table, which gives the opponent the ability to move them. Can that model stand up for free? And in this case, the stand up is their first action. It always has to be their first action, and then they can do. But then for this one, it does. Yeah, the way they wrote it, it doesn't make sense. But I don't know why they do this. But it says that they stand up as normal first action, then give them a free move before their second action. So it's not very clear what they're saying here. But
no, and this is the first one I'm disagreeing with.
Well, it doesn't make sense. The way it's worded makes no sense. They should just say no, like yes, the stand up's free, but they're saying no, the stand up takes an action, but then you get a free move. Why do you get a free move? Like that doesn't make sense. Like just say the stand up's free move, and then you get to move, do your actions as normal, right?
Because if you're angry, you can move. Because I don't know. I disagree with this one entirely. I don't know why.
It's the wording is strange, and yeah, it doesn't make sense. It should be that they have to stand up like everybody else. It takes a move to stand up, or it takes an action to stand up. What? Yeah. Just because they're angry, they get an extra move? That doesn't make sense.
No, you've taken control of the model for a turn. The rules still apply.
Yeah.
You have two shorts or one long action. If their token's sitting beside the model, you can stand up. You have to stand up. But you can do a short. You can do another short. You can do a long. But the rules... That's the mechanic. The whole game is based on that mechanic.
Yeah.
And then you just go, no, I'll give a...
AS worded poorly here, and it doesn't make sense. It should be that stand-up is an action, and then you get one more short action. That's it.
Except for instances, a fight's a free action if you've moved into the square. That's really the only free actions.
Yeah, you stand up when you get in a fight. That's a free action, but...
So
it doesn't make sense in this one.
No. Okay. So next we have, can a pinned model attack an enemy who wishes to leave the same cube?
So if you're on the ground and your enemy is trying to break away, can they attack?
And the answer is no.
So you can't punch someone off the ground.
Because what we've just determined is that your first action, if you're pinned, has to be to stand up. And that's
it. No, you can't do anything on the ground. You're on the ground. That's it.
You're not going to shoot. You're not going to. That's it. If you're pinned on the ground, you're pinned. It's you're done.
And the next question, also about being pinned, is does pinned end my activation? And the answer is yes. So if you get pinned, your activation's over. Somehow, if you get pinned during your activation, I guess. Because you have to, your only move you can do when pinned is stand up, and stand up has to be performed at the start of your activation, or in response to enemy model entering your cube in a fight, which we discussed as a free action. But stand up is, you have to do at the beginning of your activation. So if for some reason you get pinned during your action, or your activation, that's it, you're done. Which makes sense, you get knocked to the ground, you're not going to keep going.
Yeah, if you just say you open up a booby trap that has the frag, you get pinned. Oh, well, I still have a short action coming to me. Well, your short action, you have to stand up. And that's got to be at the beginning of your turn, not the last action of your turn. So, but there's nothing else you can do.
This next question I think is kind of funny too, so take it away.
Okay, what happens if a pinned model is moved as a result of forced movement, and they give examples, knockback, frag, etc., into a cube containing an enemy model? Now, this has a wall of text behind it, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. It does tell you the fight rules are on page 22, 23, and 26 of the rule book. So if you really want to follow along, if you want to look, there you go.
Yeah, it's a big description, and the answer is, I don't know why they don't just say no, you can't, you don't start a fight. You can only do a survive test if you've been pinned. So you get a free stand up, but you can only survive. So when you get knocked into a cube with an enemy model, you just stand up and you're fine. That's it. You don't get to fight.
Right.
Why do they say that? Why do they have to go through all these bonuses and all this stuff? Because it ends with, but you only be able to make a survive test. Well, that's it then. And then that goes into if you go into a one with their pin too. And it's like, well, yeah, you both just stand up. That's it.
The long and short of it is, for anyone who's listening, if you enter into a fight and you're pinned, you stand up.
That's it.
So whether you moved in there by sliding across the floor from a frag, or if they've moved into you, or if you've both been fragged in different directions and have slid in together, when you enter into a cube with an enemy model, you stand up.
And the way they put it, though, is since you're not doing a fight, the enemy doesn't stand up. So that's kind of funny, too. So you stand up, but your enemy doesn't get to stand up because no fight was initiated. I guess that makes sense, but it's still funny.
Now we're talking like one in a million.
Yeah. How often does you get knocked back into a model, into a square, while you're pinned, and that square has somebody who was also pinned? That's got to be pretty rare. We've never seen it happen. We've played quite a few games.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it's good.
It would be a strange occurrence.
Yeah. Okay.
And the next one is, what happens if my model is pinned in a cube with an enemy and the enemy model breaks away? And the best thing is, this one doesn't make sense because it goes against what they just said, because no fight was initiated, but your model gets to stand up for free, but can't stop the breakaway. Well, why does he get to stand up? There was no fight.
That's the thing.
So in the last one, they said, oh, there's no fight, so you don't get to stand up. And this one, you get to stand up, but there's no fight. You just contradicted yourself.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, it's so easy if you just make it like an Occam's razor situation where you just go,
every time there's two people in a square, they all both stand up. That's it.
That's it. Now someone's standing up as a free action. Okay, that's standing up as a free action when there's a fight involved. But there's no – the fight doesn't occur. Between those two.
I like the second one better. I think you should be fine. Yeah, you get to stand up because he left you alone. So you stand up because you went to grab for him or whatever. But that first one should be that, yeah, if you get knocked into a square, you both just stand up and that's it. Or neither of you stand up. One of the two. It shouldn't be that one guy gets to stand up and the other one doesn't. There was no fight for either of them. So why does one get to stand up and the other one doesn't?
Right. They directly contradict each other, these two. And I think in between, between those two, if you mush them together, if you grab them by the backs of their heads and force them to kiss, just kiss, then something magical would happen, like a cohesive rule. But right now,
Yeah, I don't like that one. But hey, what you gonna do?
Yeah. So next we have a delightful question. Can I choose to activate a model in a cube with an enemy model, but not perform any action such as fight or a move action? Now, you can activate a model if you want.
Yep.
If you have more models than your opponent, and you want to, you know, there's reasons where you might want to just, okay, I don't want to do anything, but I have to. You have to activate your models.
Well, especially if you're in a cube with an enemy, because you don't want to fight back. You don't want to fight them, because how often do you get – you fight somebody who's way more powerful than you, you just get killed. So this is like, you know, just – I'm not doing nothing. Don't hit me.
We're not even talking about disparaging sizes, like a Z with his three ammos, and he's in the square with a Teraton. Of course, he's not going to go like, come on at me.
Yeah.
I'll knock you on your ass, you turtle. We're talking maybe – I've had it happen where I've been more powerful or even matched fight, and I've just tapped out. I've said no mas. I can't risk.
Roll poorly, and that's it.
You're tied up right now, and the last two times you've wounded me. Every time I've got a little froggy and jumped, you've smacked me down. So, you know what? You have to stay here in this model cube with me.
Yeah, you could try to break away, or you could try to fight me, but I'm not fighting you.
That makes perfect sense. So the answer is yes. You can choose to activate your model and do nothing. That's a pretty standard rule, and it just addresses a what if that could maybe have gone the other way, but no, it's pretty straightforward.
And the next question, before we get to the specialty questions in the last, is can I reposition my model within a cube after winning a fight? And the answer is no. You have to use a movement to reposition. It doesn't happen automatically. Don't touch that model. It's staying where it is.
Yeah. And since you do have to use a move action to maneuver inside the cube, that makes sense. I'm not saying that once you stand your model up, any variation of the direction he's facing or, you know, that the standard. But I think this is to address, oh, I know that he used the time he tied me up to move people into position to get a shot on me with a safe plate.
You can't tuck yourself away somewhere.
You can't win the fight and then whoop in into behind some barrels and it's nothing. Nope, reason stand him up where he was.
Yep. So we're taking another break and we'll come back to finish this up with the specialty things and some other stuff.
That was a very eloquent way of putting it. I think that's the title of this episode.
It's so hot.
It is. I don't want to lie to you. Today, in Canada, it was 39 degrees, and we're not built for this.
It was pretty warm.
You in Arizona are probably going, you know, suck it up, Buttercup. But I didn't even have the cover off my air conditioner. Oh, follow me.
So we'll be back after we melt.
It is time for a brief message from our friends at Iron Watch Magazine.
Do you like Mantic Games? Do you want to read about your favorite games in a monthly magazine? Have we got the offer for you, Iron Watch Magazine. Iron Watch brings you the latest news, articles, and short stories taking place in the Mantic universe. Dreadball, Kings of War, Dead Zone, Warpath. You want it? They got it. Ironwatch.wordpress.com. Get it now for the low, low price of free. You can't beat that at twice the price. That's ironwatch.wordpress.com.
Download now.
Hey, this is Community Pat, and you are listening to Rob and Jack on Dead Zone, the podcast.
And welcome back. We're discussing the FAQ, and now we're moving on to the more specific things about the expansions, and then about abilities and army lists. So the first question is from Infestation, and it's can the long range observer uses On My Mark ability on pinned models. Let us see what the On My Mark ability is, because I have no idea. So the On My Mark ability says you can spend an army special result when one of your models has taken a shoot action. A second unactivated model with line of sight to the target of the first shoot action may take a shoot action aimed at the same target and mark the second model activated once the shoot action is resolved. And obviously you cannot do that from a pinned model because a pinned model can only do one thing, and that is stand up. I think we've discussed this before, and people get into your thick heads. You can only stand up if you're pinned. When will they ever learn?
Easy, buddy. Easy. The heat's starting to get you. You're starting to get heat rage.
Bases don't matter.
They really don't. They really don't. Okay. So yes, obviously a pin model can only stand up. So the next on the list we have from Nexus Psi. The question is, how does Recon Unit N32-19's rope-a-dope work? And the answer is, when an enemy model enters a cube with an unactivated model, the enemy model completes its move or sprint action. Then, prior to the fight action, an unactivated model within the cube of Recon's unit strike team can move out of the cube, as per page 16 of the Nexus Psi rulebook. So if that's a little too complicated and you don't know, if you can't follow along, then you're right there with the rest of us, because I have no goddamn idea.
It just means the rope-a-dope means that when an enemy comes to fight you, you get to move out of the way.
Right.
And all this, and you have to be unactivated, which is kind of situational. So it just means, yeah, I don't know why this had to be in here, because it's, hey, he comes in your square, you move out of the square. Ta-da! And then but the only thing is that the enemy model can, if he has a short action remaining, can take it. So, but he can't move again, because move is not allowed. You can only move or sprint. Right. So he couldn't just chase you down, but he can just shoot you and probably get clear shot on you too.
And I think that is, I think we were talking to Coach maybe, just as a side, not in a official recording podcast capacity. I think we were discussing that type of thing, but it's pretty straightforward. I think.
Yeah. I don't understand why it had to be cleared up, but yeah, you just move. I guess the people thought maybe once you move in for the fight, it ends your turn, because the fight usually ends your turn. But there was no fight. The guy moved before the fight happened, so you can still shoot him or, you know, do other short action other than move, because you already moved. So good. Makes sense. I guess that's why they had to clear it up. That's all. That's good. It's cleared up now, people. And the next one is, in a campaign, which we never do, if a model picks up a permanent injury, it loses a level. Is this just for working out veteran level, or is XP ability dice stat bonuses also lost? I have no idea what any of this means, because we don't play campaigns, but the answer is losing a veteran level does not remove veteran dice. The new ability or stat upgrade that you gained from initially entering that level, however, your veteran level needs to be adjusted and could influence underdog dice. I don't know what any of that means. I don't think you know what any of that means, but there you go, Jack.
yeah. No, yeah, sure. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Maybe I'm angry. I don't know.
No, you've convinced me now, Rob. I'm on your side.
You're angry now?
Ish.
Yeah. Okay. Hopefully whoever plays campaigns, that helps you if you didn't know what was happening. I don't even understand the answer, let alone the question.
No. So if you really wanted to do some hand-holding to a couple of know-nothing retards like us, you could probably send us a message and tell us, but really,
We just won't read it. Well, actually, now that that Gmail has those automated responses, I can guarantee I'll use one of those for it.
Ooh, just a dick pic.
No, I don't think that's an automated response from Gmail.
Sam, then I've been doing it wrong.
Wow, I didn't. That's an interesting choice.
Rob, don't check your email tonight, then.
No, that's what. Anyways, those were all automated responses. I thought it was special.
The next question is: if a model goes boom in a campaign game, does it get to roll on the injury table? Kind of interesting. Even as a non-campaign player, I can see the guy.
I understand this question too.
Yeah. So far, so good. I say this is a good sign. The answer, the model removed due to boom during the game still counts as a casualty and therefore rolls on the injury table on page 102 to 103 of the Dead Zone 2.0 rule book.
There you go.
So
makes sense. He died, so he gets an injury.
So, yeah, I guess...
I'm not angry about this one.
Better luck next time, guy. Maybe pack a little more C4 into that there.
Or maybe a little less. No, you won't get so injured. I don't know.
I don't know either. It's hot. People, it's hot.
So now we're moving into the errata. I don't know why this is separate from the other errata. It's all errata to me. But abilities. The first one is teleport. Teleport is now a long action, and it allows you to move 3 cubes of unobstructed movement. The model using teleport must end a teleport in a cube where it can be physically placed on a table, not midair or inside an inaccessible cube surrounded by 6 solid walls. Well, you should be able to do that. You could teleport into an inaccessible cube. That's what teleport does. But yeah. Anyways, I guess they're making it so you can't just hide. And you may teleport out of a cube containing an enemy model, but would be subject to the breaking away rule. Once again, that doesn't make much sense because you assume teleport happens instantaneously. So how does the guy stop you from teleporting instantaneously? But once again, that's a rules mechanic to stop people from just teleporting out of fights, I guess.
This answer was supposed to end two major questions. One about getting free fights by being teleporting after, which was totally legal. I don't want to get too far into it. There was a way you could chain.
Yeah, you could move, fight, and then teleport, or you. How was it? Anyways, there was a way to do it, but.
But that's gone now. Obviously, that was the big bugaboo that needed to be corrected here. And the other one, again, they reiterated you had to end on terra firma. You couldn't end your action all hither and yon. Okay. All makes perfect sense. I could have stopped there. Then they added you can't go into a cube that's covered – a cube that is – covering all six sides.
I guess that's so you can't just, like, at the end of the game, have your last model hidden and not be able to get, like, he's just in that wall and you couldn't win, maybe? Do a timeout or whatever?
But what if it didn't have a floor?
You just say that if he goes in there, he falls to his death.
No, I'm saying, like, it says the cube is... I'm just seeing, like, is this meaning that the teleport is a line of sight situation where he has to see at least a little bit?
No, because it's you can teleport through a wall. They're just saying that as a rules thing. It's not a thematic thing at all. You should thematically be able to go into a square that's surrounded by six solid walls. Unless you're saying that if it's surrounded by six solid walls, it's a solid square, like inside a solid too. So he'd be teleporting into a solid block. That's the way to say it. I guess thematically, that's the way you should think of it. If it's surrounded by six solid walls, there's no access to it. It means it's just a solid block. There you go.
I think they answered two questions that needed to be answered, and then they went, like, they just stopped, added two more sentences that brought up two more questions. I don't know. I'm sure I'm not the only one. Other people must be wondering about the reasoning behind that, but you would think if it's an open space, a teleport, they could teleport into that open space. Whether that prolongs the game indefinitely, yeah, that's not fair, I guess.
Yeah, but, you don't want to make it so teratons are even more powerful. I'm fine with that, just to make it so you don't break the game.
Yeah, but we were watching guys stand on bridges during a tournament. Inaccessible to whole armies. What's the difference?
Well, at least in this case, there's no way to get at him. But in the other case, at least if you had a shooter, any shooter could shoot the guy, right? It's only if you're only left with big guys left, it's the only time it happens. This is, it's, you're done. That's it. That guy's in there and he could just sit in there. So, especially if you have to, if you're to win the game, you need his points to win. Otherwise he'll win. And you would have killed him if you could just hunt him down, but he goes into there and just hides, and then that's it. Like, that's pretty cheesy. It's to prevent the cheese, the fromage.
Okay, so it makes no sense if you really boil it down, but it's...
It makes no sense.
It makes no sense. But then I can see that. I hadn't thought about that.
And okay. It does make sense if you just say that, yeah, if it's solid walls all around, obviously inside is solid. Because there's no access to it anyway, so why would they have an empty void in a solid area? If you're going to have an empty void, have a door on it so you could use it as a closet, right?
You don't want to be like that Star Trek ensign in the red uniform where she's stuck halfway through the decking.
Well, that's what they should say. That if he goes in there, he automatically dies because he's teleported into a solid. Inside was a, he didn't know, but there was a jackhammer or something, and he just teleported half inside of a jackhammer. And the wires jacking. Rebar. He teleported inside of rebar. But what do you think about the breaking away? Once again, you don't want to make teratons too powerful, but thematically, once again, he should be just gone. I guess when they teleport, they slowly teleport. And you can punch them and break their concentration.
So they start waving out like,
boo-doo.
You just give them a backhand.
It takes three boo-doo-doos before you can get out of there. So yeah, they could smack you before you get the third boo-doo-doo.
I don't agree with it.
It's going to be, I'm going to write a story and that's going to be in it. And the Territon started to teleport. Biddaloo, biddaloo. Oh, before the last biddaloo, he got punched and stopped. Now he's stuck in that square fighting.
The day the Territon died. Memoirs of a Territon who teleported too slowly.
Yep. So, the next one, Jack, what is that one?
The next one is Army Lists.
No, you missed Knockback.
Oh. Oh. Hey, there's two in the abilities. The next one is Army Lists. Oh, it's hot in here.
It's too hot in here.
Okay. So the next one is Knockback. Only results in moving a model into another cube if you cause potential damage. So it's basically a statement that says Knockback only does the physical moving of the model if you've caused potential damage, which is one more successes in your fight. But this is before tough and armor. So potential is the key word here.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily need to damage them, but if you would have, if they were naked, they still move back. So they can be knocked back into another square and you had not done a single point of damage to them.
Yeah. They should just say, yeah. Yeah, you should say if you beat them on dice, or, well, I guess it doesn't necessarily, you don't necessarily just beat them on dice, though. There's other ways to do it, so that's fine.
Well enough worded that you can understand, and I think it's one of those things that if it's not specifically written out, I can see why you could say, well, you failed to fight me, so maybe you whiffed. Why would I be flung backwards if your fist passed in front of my nose? This is saying, well, your
armor. I made contact, yeah, but it was your armor or your tough skin that stopped me from hurting you, but you still made contact, yeah.
So the energy that was absorbed by your armor still moved you, slid you backwards in some sort of kung fu esque. I don't know.
Kung fu esque.
Yeah.
Wire work. Armulus, Jack. The first one is Stage 3 Zs, the zombies, and the beast ability. Why didn't they have beast ability already? That was not a rhetorical question, Jack. Why didn't they have beast ability already?
because the zombies are still like the second iteration was better than the first, but I think the pendulum had swung a little too far in course correcting. We're starting to find the middle. We're starting to find a nice balance. And this, I think, still, the zombies are still a good troop. Don't get me wrong. But I think this makes them a little less every tool in the shed and more, okay, you can't do everything with them.
But once again, thematically, of course they're beasts. Otherwise, they'd just be stage 3As. If they could think enough to grab a weapon or use a weapon other than as a club, they'd be a 3A, not a zombie. Right.
Yeah, I was.
They're all like scary looking undead monsters. So it's not like it's a skin condition.
I was told thematically that they aren't zombies in the same vein as say a Romero zombie undead. They're just plagued to a different degree, and in the world I can see that. That makes sense. But I think the way to bring the zombies into line the way they need to be, I think the fluff's going to have to reflect the stats on this one.
Yeah, that's, but of course,
and I think this is good.
Whoever told you that they're not zombies like Romero zombies? Obviously, they're just like, well, maybe a little faster. Maybe they're like what's that other movie? 28 days later. Yeah, because. Otherwise, they'd just be 3As. They're called zombies for a reason.
Yeah.
Like, that's a nickname, but they reminded them of zombies. That's why they called them that. So, yeah. Add beast, people. It should have been there from the beginning. I was fine with the tough or whatever and all that, but yeah, they should always have beast.
Yeah. So, next, this is my favorite, new. Oh. Yeah. My top three. This is my favorite new rule in the FAQ. Striders. Stuntbot, Iron Ancestor, and yeah, that's it. So the Striders, the Rebel Enforcer, Plague, Stuntbot, Iron Ancestor, and Iron Ancestor Thor pattern. They've made sure they're all...
Yeah, they covered every single one. Yeah, they made sure they're all in there.
Which, this is an errata. That's what you have to do. It's nitpicky, but they have to do it. You remove the vehicle ability. So they're still vehicles. You can't purchase them as troops now. Although that would be delightful. Wouldn't that be like a nice sangria on a sweltering, sweltering Tuesday night?
Yep.
Refreshing. But anyways, so this is what we're going to have to unpack this one. You and I are going to have to really, this is the one that really needs the nuts and bolts.
You forgot to say they added Solid and Beast also.
Yes, yes. But okay, add Solid, Beast, remove vehicle.
Yep.
So, the remove vehicle I was going to start with because I think that's the big one. But yes, added Solid, add Beast. Beast, again, I think should have always kind of been there in that they shouldn't, a Strider shouldn't be able to open up.
Yeah, they're not that dexterous to be able to activate a box to open it up or grab a grenade or any of that stuff. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's...
Half of them don't have hands.
And okay, since we're doing the lesser of the two, Solid was a delight. It was a nice kind of bonus that I had anticipated.
Well, no longer they can't be pinned anymore. Thank God.
Which has been one of the specters looming over us, like when we woke at night with our little sleeping caps and lit the candle beside our bed. That specter was floating above us the whole time. Like you could pin a completely encased vehicle with any of the small arms in the game.
A Z could do it.
So
it's so easy. A Z could do it. Maybe. I'm not sure if Zs have any weapons that have that can pin, but anyways. Yes, get into the vehicle. Why is removing vehicles so important, Jack? Why would that matter?
Because now we have a bipedal, human-sized, humanoid-shaped contraption, but bipedal nonetheless, that can now move up and down cubes.
Yay! Yes, finally, there's a reason to have a Strider in the battlefield. That's the only reason anybody would have a mech, because in like as a force. Otherwise, why wouldn't you just have a tank?
That's why
the ability to climb.
Right now, DARPA is trying desperately to make robots that can walk, like
upstairs or climb up things, or
just to have some douchebag come in off the side of the camera frame and kick it over.
Oh.
I hate that guy.
You feel sorry for the dog, big dog?
You know what I'm talking about. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. That guy coming in there and giving a boot inside.
You, for one, welcome our new robot overlords?
Yes, yes. So, that's the big one. By removing vehicle, I don't know if there something else maybe that you're thinking?
No, that's the big one for sure. You don't no longer need ramps to go up a level. That is the big thing from a removing vehicle. And the reason they added Beast is because that was part of Vehicle 2. So they had to add it in as a separate ability because vehicles can't pick up things. So that's why they had to add the ability Beast. But yeah, Solid and the fact that they can climb now. Striders might be a viable option in an army now. It used to be like, why would I bother paying for a Strider? Now it's Strider climbing up and going up on the next level and shooting down at people. And I can't wait to actually use a Strider to climb up on something.
Solid was that pipe dream I had. Like it's such a bonus that I'd have been happy with vehicle. I still would have, you pin a Strider. That's ridiculous. But to get both, I think that
was a win.
That is a win. So that is why that's my favorite. I think everything was done right in that entry, as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. And then there's this thing saying that the Forge Father Huskarls, too stubborn to die on page 1 of the FAQ 1, should be changed to Steel Warrior Huskarl. It must have been just that they wrote the wrong name. And I think least, because it was made by Coach, is the Coach rule is for deployment is now official. That if you're unable to place your strike team in a deployment zone because of your cube limits, you just give yourself extra squares, and then you give your opponent the same extra squares. Simple, clean. Coach, you are correct. That is the way to do it. And it is appropriate that he somehow arranged that to be the very last thing in the FAQ, so we have to mention him. But that wraps it up. That's the FAQ. Yeah. And I'm sick of talking about it. This has been a long episode.
it had to be done, and we've done it. And for a 0.5, this has been an epic journey, and it probably could have been its own non-special episode, but I'm glad we did it. We did it. It's still fresh.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things we don't like. There's a lot of things that don't make sense still, and there's a lot of things we do like. So I think they're going in the right direction, and at least it's come out. Well, maybe not officially, but at least it's out there in the wild. And I'm okay with everything, because anything that I don't like, we don't play by those rules anyway, so...
Yeah. Again, at home, play the way you want. House rules. Do make it fun for you. Don't get bogged down in some of the stuff with tournament-minded people. And just you do you. We love you. You just do what you want to do.
You do you, boo-boo. And that wraps it up. So I've been Rob.
And I'm Jack.
And we're back pretty soon with episode 71, because this was a special episode, so expect that to be coming out in a few days, actually. So there you go. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Dead Zone Podcast. I have been your announcer, William Randolph Wintergreen. Visit the website, deadzonegame.podbean.com. Email your hosts at deadzonepodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, you can follow the show at Dead Zone Podcast. The Dead Zone Podcast is a production of Vinland Old Time Radio Productions. You have been listening to the Dead Zone Podcast. And now, a word from the fine folks at Vinland Old Time Radio.
You think this is funny? Oh, you don't?
Oh.
Then maybe you'll find Vinland Old Time Radio more of your liking.
More of your liking indeed, Rob.
VinlandOldTimeRadio.podbean.com. It's where the funny lives.